you guys. Time for the Flickers of Fear show, where I review movies. So this one, okay, so this is like a really interesting way that I came across this one. This movie is called The Haunting of Julia, commonly. I've also seen it called Full Circle. I believe it was released as Full Circle in the UK. But this movie, it seemed like it's not super well known. It came out in the UK in 1977 under the title Full Circle, as I mentioned. Didn't kind of get any traction, got some reviews and shit like that. Mostly negative, which I don't really get. So it sort of went nowhere, and then it was released in the US several years later in 1981 under the name The Haunting of Julia, and also didn't really go anywhere. Now, I'm not sure, like, nowadays, for a long time, it was only available on VHS. Like, it didn't even have a DVD release. As far as I know, it doesn't have a Blu-ray release. And I think I ended up seeing it sort of accidentally or randomly just because someone had uploaded a copy to YouTube and I saw that it was based on the Peter Straub novel Julia from 1975, which I read a long time ago. And I was like, what? They made an adaptation of that? It's like, I didn't know. So I ended up watching it and I really, really loved it. And I was like, what the hell? Where is this movie? Now, I don't know. Nowadays, it might be easier to get because Shudder just added it, at least in the US, maybe in the UK too. I'm not really sure. But I was really, really excited to see it. And I think that you can rent it on YouTube. And it looks like it's, you know, in the really nice widescreen presentation, because I feel like the free one that I watched on YouTube didn't look too bad, but it looked like it was a rip from a VHS. So it looked kind of crappy. But the one that's on Shudder right now looks really nice. And it's like widescreen presentation or anything. So I would actually recommend, if you can't get it in physical medium, I'm not sure if you can, but I would actually recommend that you watch it, because I feel like it's sort of, it's like an underappreciated gem, I think. Now, that's not to say it's not going to be for everybody. Like I said, you know, no movie is, I suppose. But if you're really into 70s era, creepy, slow burn ghost stories, haunted house sort of stories, along the lines of The Changeling or Don't Look Now or Burnt Offerings or something like that, then you probably really, really dig this. Also, I want to say Rosemary's Baby, because Mia Farrow is in this, and the character that she plays in this is very much like Rosemary Woodhouse, who she played in Rosemary's Baby. So if you liked that, you would probably dig this as well. Although, as I said, this is more a sort of slow burn dramatic ghost story, not so much demonic possession or anything like that. So the movie was actually, this is very funny too. The movie was actually directed by Richard Loncrane, and he is a British TV and film director. And when I decided to do this movie, because like I said, I'd seen it probably 6 or 7 years ago, just randomly on YouTube. And then I was excited to see that Shudder had added it. So I wanted to review it because I really feel like more people need to see it. And I didn't realize when I was rewatching it that Richard Loncrane, who directed it, is also the same guy that directed the film version of Brimstone and Treacle, the one with Sting that we talked about on our matinee show not too long ago. So I was like, well, that's a little weird bit of kismet there, isn't it? I didn't even realize that it was the same director. Shows what I know. So the movie also stars Keir Dullea, if I'm pronouncing that right, the guy who probably most famous from 2001 A Space Odyssey. He's been in various other things as well. Also, I realized the daughter from the very beginning of the movie, she's only in the first, you know, probably 5 or 10 minutes, was played by Sophie Ward. And I was kind of like, man, she looks so familiar. And then I realized that she was actually in Young Sherlock Holmes, which I think came out in 1986. And I saw like a million times back in cable. So I was like, oh, well, that explains it. That's where I've seen her before. And it also stars Tom Conti. And I think that he is probably, I mean, I really, really dug this movie. I thought the atmosphere of it was great. The score is fantastic. I love the music of it, you know, because this is exactly my jam. I love this kind of like slow atmospheric. It's a ghost story. It's also like a murder mystery. And I'm super, super into that. But Tom Conti is probably like the best thing about this movie. He's like, I don't want to say he's like comic relief, but he's like, I don't know. He's kind of like the voice of reason. And he's kind of like a real bright spot in the movie. He plays Mia Farrow's best friend and all this other kind of shit. And he's like great in it. Everybody's great in it, but he's like particularly great. So what is this movie about? So Mia Farrow plays a woman named Julia Lofting. Now she's married to a dude played by Keir Dullea, whose name is Magnus, who you don't see them interact as husband and wife very much. But even from that brief interaction, you can kind of tell that not, I mean, they're very wealthy, and you find out at some point that she's kind of the one with all the money. I didn't actually even catch that, like, the first couple times I watched this, because as it goes on, and I was kind of like, well, why does her husband want her back so bad? And then, like, when I watched it this time, I was kind of like, oh, well, that explains that. She's the one with all the money. So you can tell that he's kind of a little bit cold, a little bit disinterested, maybe even from the beginning, like, only married her for her money, perhaps. I'm not really sure. But so the two of them have a daughter who I believe, I don't know if she's supposed to be, I think the synopsis said she was 8, but she looks a little bit older than that. She actually looks 10 or 11. So in the first scene, which is actually pretty fucking horrific to watch, their daughter, they're all at their breakfast table. This is set in London, by the way, where they live. Kensington, I believe it is. So they're all at the breakfast table, and their little girl chokes on a piece of apple. And I guess they didn't really know the Heimlich maneuver back then. And I did look it up, and I think the Heimlich maneuver wasn't actually really all that widely known in the mid-70s, which is when the novel came out. So I guess, you know, that's that. So they don't really know the Heimlich maneuver. Like, you know, Magnus is hanging her upside down, trying to get her out. And like, he's like, I got to call the, you know, ambulance. And, you know, Julia's like, you know, we don't have time. And the little girl's like dying, like right there on the floor. And like I said, it's a horrific, horrific scene. I've heard that, like, if you have children, it's really hard to watch. It's hard for me to watch too. And I'm just like, not a big fan of kids, but it's like just the way it's, because you can imagine that happening, like somebody just dying right in front of you like that and just happening right out of the blue. So the little girl's dying. And finally, you know, Julia is like, well, you know, the ambulance isn't going to get here in time. She has to breathe. So she tries to do an impromptu tracheotomy on her, which doesn't work. And the little girl ends up dying. The little girl's name is Katie, by the way. Now, after that, understandably, Julia has a nervous breakdown. And she is kind of put into a sanatorium or whatever it is. Now, she's only in there for 2 months, which really isn't that long to get over the death of a kid. But it really does seem like everyone's kind of like, okay, you're fine, you know, go out in the world or whatever. So her husband comes to pick her up. And again, understandably, she doesn't really have anything. She doesn't really want to have anything more to do with him, because she explains kind of later on, she's like, you know, it was bad from the beginning. And it's like, now that our daughter isn't around anymore, there's really no reason for me to stay with him. You know, so I'm out of here. So Magnus goes to pick her up, and she just kind of like evades him and like runs out the back and fucking takes off in a cab. Now, since she's the one with all the money, she is able to purchase a really, really nice house. And, you know, all by herself, it's furnished and everything like that. And she's like, you know, I'm just going there. I'm going to start my life over. I don't really want to talk to Magnus anymore. Now, Magnus is really, and like I said, the first couple of times I saw this movie, I was like, why is he so, he is essentially like starts stalking her. Like at first, Julia tells her sister-in-law, she's like, please don't tell him where I am. But Magnus kind of threatens his sister-in-law, not threatens her, but kind of like bullies her into like telling where Julia is. And then he starts calling her, and then he's just basically starts harassing her, like lurking around the house. Like he breaks in at one point. So, you know, he's kind of a dickbag. So she moves in by herself. And like I said, she's got Magnus kind of creeping around, wanting her to, you know, come back to him. I think it's because he wants to eventually have her committed, and then he's going to take all her money. That's what I think. And I think it's kind of like implied that that's what he's going to do, because he doesn't really seem to give that much of a shit about her. And he doesn't really seem all that upset that their daughter is dead. Like he's just kind of, you know, so that's kind of my theory, and I'm sticking to it. So basically, Julia is hanging out with her friend, Mark, who's played by Tom Conti. He owns like a antique shop or whatever. So she has this really cool house. Now, from the very beginning, she begins to think that maybe this house might be just a little bit haunted. Like just weird shit starts happening. Like, you know, she has this heater in the room and it's just kind of like it won't go off. Like even though she turns it off, it keeps turning itself back on. And it's just like various things like that. There's a little toy that she brings with her that was her daughter Katie's, which is like a little like Harlequin clown or whatever with little symbols. And it does its little symbols by itself sometimes. So it's like she kind of gets the feeling that maybe her daughter is still around or is still haunting her or whatever. Now, it so happens that Magnus, her jackal ex-husband, is so keen to get her back into his clutches that he says to his sister, hey, you know, that seance group, that psychic that you hang out with, that group that you hang out with, let's have the seance over at Julia's house. And maybe that'll like freak her out because she's still upset about the daughter dying. So it's like, maybe that'll freak her out and she'll be scared and she'll want to come back to me because she won't want to live by herself anymore in that creepy old house. So basically the sister calls up and is like, hey, can we have like a psychic meeting over at your house tonight? Okay, thanks. You know what I mean? So Julia's like, I guess so. All right. So I've seen some other reviewers say that Julia organized the seance, but that's not correct. The seance actually got sort of foisted upon her. I forgot to mention too, that all along this time period, like even before the seance happens, she's been, you know, when she's been walking around, she keeps seeing what she thinks is her daughter, not necessarily a ghost, but like she'd see like a girl like at the school and like see the back of her head and it kind of looked like her. And she kind of saw her like leaning in the park, like playing in the sandbox and stuff. But then like she'd disappear. So she does kind of think that maybe there is something going on. So during this seance, which she does not want to participate in, and she has Mark come over too, it'll kind of be, you know, moral support or whatever. And she doesn't want to participate, but the other people are participating. And the psychic who is there doesn't get too far into the shit before she starts like wigging out. Like she's just kind of like, no, it's not safe here. It's not safe. She's like saying shit like that. And then another woman in the group goes upstairs to the bathroom and something apparently frightens her and she falls down the stairs. Like she's not hurt that badly, but she kind of won't say what it was that scared her. And then Julia starts saying to the psychic, she's like, well, what the fuck? What did you see? Like what upset you so much? Because they had to cut the seance short. And all she'll say is like, I saw a child, I saw a child. So of course, Julia thinks that, you know, that she's seeing her daughter, Katie. But the psychic also says, you can't stay in that house. It's not safe there. And Julia's sitting there going, well, if my daughter was like haunting the house, was like hanging around, why would that make it unsafe? So as the time goes on, like I said, Magnus is still creeping around. He's kind of like trying to bust into the house and all this other kind of crap. Now, what ends up happening too, is that there's a scene where Julia goes to the park, sees what she thinks is her daughter, then she disappears, and then she goes over there to where the little girl was digging in the sandbox, and she finds like a pet turtle, and it's like all cut up. And then she finds a knife that looks pretty much like the knife, like a scalpel type knife that she used to do the tracheotomy on her daughter. So there's that kind of creepy shit. Magnus breaks into her house while she's not there. And he thinks she's home because he hears something. He sees the heater on, you know, and he thinks he hears something down in the basement. But something apparently pushes him down the basement stairs and he dies. Now, nobody ever finds the body, which I'm going to get back to in a minute because that kind of goes into a theory that I have about what's going on in this movie. And then as the story goes on, Julia becomes determined to figure out what the fuck is going on in this house. So she finds out a few things. She goes back to the psychic. The psychic says, I didn't see, you know, I said a child. I didn't say it was a little girl. It's actually a little boy. And all she said was, you know, the little boy, he's in the park and he's all bleeding. So Julia finds out that a little boy named Jeffrey Braden was murdered in the same park that she had seen the cut up turtle. And he was murdered about 30 years ago because he used to get like bullied and picked on because he was a German. And she finds out, she goes to see the kid's mom. And the kid's mom is basically like, well, this vagrant that used to kind of hang around the park was actually arrested and executed for his murder, but I know he didn't do it. It's like, it was actually all these kids that used to pick on him. And she's like, and a couple of them are still alive. And so she gives Julia their names. So as Julia is undergoing this investigation, it turns out what happened was that the little boy that was murdered, it was actually a bunch of kids that had been picking on him. And the ringleader of the kids was this little girl named Olivia Rudge, who used to live with her mom in the house that Julia is now living in. Olivia Rudge apparently died the same way that Julia's daughter died. Or at least that's what you're led to believe at first. Like the neighbors saying, yes, you know, the little girl that used to live here, like she choked to death in this house. So Julia begins to twig on to the fact that it is actually not her daughter, Katie, that is haunting her, but it's this little girl, Olivia, who is actually a murderer. So she goes to see Olivia's mother, who is still alive, and she's super old, but she's like in a mental hospital or something like that. And the old woman is like totally crazy, but she somehow knows that Julia, quote unquote, killed her daughter, which Julia is like, yeah, I didn't kill her. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like, she didn't really kill her. Yes, she did do the tracheotomy, but the little girl probably would have died anyway, because I don't think that she was already looked like she was turning blue and stuff, like before the ambulance people even got there. So I don't think she was necessarily responsible for the death, because, you know, Katie would have died anyway. But the old lady like screams at her, you killed your daughter too. And she's like, I also killed my daughter because she was evil incarnate. So I just strangled the little brat. I guess that Olivia's mom knew that she had killed that little boy. And the thing about it too, is that she not only killed the little kid, she had this kind of like, sort of power over the other kids. She could like make them do shit. And apparently she made them kill animals. And then when they killed Jeffrey Braden, it's like she not only smothered the kid, but then she like cut his penis off. So she was a pretty horrible child. So her mom ended up killing her. So Julia finds all this shit out. Like I said, you know, her husband Magnus is dead in the basement. She never finds the body. Her friend Mark also gets killed. And it's kind of weird because there's a scene where Mark was supposed to go with her to go see Heather Rudge, who was Olivia's mother, like in the asylum. And he never shows up, but she goes anyway. Now, prior to this, you see a scene where Julia is unplugging the heater in her house. Remember I said the heater that never goes off? And she like unplugs the heater and like sparks fly out of it. And then at the same time, you're led to believe Mark is in the bathtub and a lamp falls into the bathtub and electrocutes him. And then they show a scene like where she's kind of sitting on the stairs, like she's going to go see the woman or whatever. And then like there's a cutaway, he dies in the bathtub, and then you go back and she's gone. Like she's not sitting on the stairs anymore. So when you get to the thing, so at the very end, Julia goes back to her house and she sees the ghost of Olivia Rudge, who is she's a gorgeous little girl. She's like this beautiful little girl with these big, huge blue eyes. She looks like a China doll or whatever. And she's kind of like coming at her, and Julia is like accepting. It's like, yeah, you know, it's all okay now. And she's like trying to embrace her or whatever. And then they kind of like cut away again. And then you see that Julia has either cut her own throat or the ghost has done it. Now, I watched like several reviews of this earlier, and I feel like some people, this is one of those movies that it's kind of a complicated story. It helps if you've read the novel. The novel is actually very good. It came out in 1975. It was written by Peter Straub, as I said. It was actually his first supernatural novel. I think he had just done kind of like drama type novels before that, but this was like his first one that was like a ghost story. And it's really good. It has a lot in common with his later book, Ghost, which is just called Ghost Story. But it's not as sprawling as that. It's kind of more like an intimate story. But this is one of those movies where you really, really have to pay attention to what everybody is saying. Otherwise, you might not know what's going on. Because like I said, it's not a super complicated story, but it is a little bit complicated. So you do kind of have to listen to all the clues and everything. And there's another thing, too, that I think maybe gets interpreted as like plot holes, but I have a theory about it that I think explains all the plot holes. So remember how I said that Magnus breaks into the house like a douche and ends up falling down the stairs and dying, or someone pushes him down the stairs. You don't see who it is. And then Mark ends up dying in the tub, and various other things like that happen. And you're led to believe that the ghost of this evil little girl, Olivia, has been doing all this stuff. It's ambiguous enough to leave another interpretation. It could be, too, that Julia is doing it and you're kind of like interpreting it that way. But I think the more likely explanation, and this goes back to something that the psychic, whose name was Mrs. Flood, if I didn't mention it, something that the psychic said very, very early on in the movie, like right before they were going to do the seance at Julia's house. Mrs. Flood says that ghosts can only operate through a living person. So I think the thrust of the story is that Olivia, the ghost, if she existed, essentially was possessing Julia. So I think Julia actually was going around, you know, killing her husband. I think she did like push him down the stairs. She probably killed her friend Mark as well. You know, I think she was doing all this stuff, which would explain why, you know, she never called Mark to see where he was, why he wasn't turning up when they're supposed to, why she never found her husband's body in the basement or whatever. I think the ghost was possessing her to do these things because the ghost of the kid was evil. That so, like I said, it's not plot holes. It totally does make sense. Anyway, what I was saying, I really, really, really love this movie, and I feel like more people need to see it. As I said, if you're really into, like I am, into like these 70s ghost movies, you know, 70s haunted house movies, this is a good. This and The Changeling are kind of similar. I know The Changeling came out a couple years after this, 1980. Because, like I said, this came out in 1977, at least in the UK. It didn't come out in the US until 1981. But this and The Changeling are a similar kind of vibe. I think The Changeling had like a bigger budget, but you know, it's along the same lines. It's along the same tone. Has to do with, you know, grief and like, you know, a family being killed, and then you know, then the ghost of someone else haunting someone, and then, you know, you having to solve a murder mystery like in your new house. So it is a similar kind of thing. Also, you know, like I said, it's a little bit like Rosemary's Baby because Mia Farrow's character is kind of like the character she played in Rosemary's Baby as well. And, you know, just that kind of stuff. Burnt offerings, as I mentioned before. Just so if you like anything like that, it's a very slow burn. It's very creepy. It's really atmospheric. Like I said, the music, I just love, love, love the music in this movie. I don't know what it is. It's just, it really like, it's very evocative, and it just really kind of like takes me somewhere, and I'm really into it. If this is sounds like something that you would be into, then definitely check it out, because I feel like it's really, really underappreciated, really underrated. You can watch it for free on YouTube. However, if you have Shudder, you can see it on there, which probably would look a lot nicer. And as I don't know if you can buy it in physical medium, I don't, you know, whether that matters to you or not. I think you can rent it on YouTube now as well. So, like I said, maybe it has been restored, which I think is really cool because I don't know. I feel like it got released back then, and it just kind of went nowhere. And I didn't even, you know, even a horror junkie like me, I had never heard of it. And even though I really liked Peter Straub, and I really liked the adaptation, the movie adaptation they did of Ghost Story, which was in 1981. And so I was like really surprised that I had never heard of this one. And I just kind of stumbled across it accidentally one day. And I was like, where the hell has this movie been all my life? You know what I mean? And I just feel like it's just really not well known, and that's kind of a shame because I really dig it. But yeah, so if you get a chance, please check it out. It's really good. Like I said, The Haunting of Julia is what it's called. The novel is just called Julia. I've also seen it called Full Circle, so you know, maybe you can be able to find it under that if you're in another country. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.